we use a then we use an electrode that's fastened over the particular muscle group, and this electrode will make an electrical pathway to the skin. Okay, we take the potential from that, put it into our special amplifier. Okay, this amplifier has another feature of being able to eliminate any electrical noise that comes from the environment around the particular muscle group that we're looking at, okay? Such as fluorescent lights. If you come over into 304, you can see a beautiful example of noise in my amplifier from fluorescent lights. However, this amplifier can cancel those out. It's called differential property. It eliminates by feeding back the signal and eliminates some of the noise that comes into the system. Okay. I take the signal that's amplified from the actual analog voltage from the muscle tissue and make square waves out of it. We put it through a comparator. We take these little square waves and integrate them so that we get, rather than a rapid change with each muscle cell firing, we get a slow change. And this is fed into a regular TTL Schmidt trigger circuit. The number is 7413. This puts out a TTL, or a transistor-transistor logic compatible pulse. We use that pulse to trigger a monostable multivibrator, 74121. Okay, that gives a measured pulse of a predetermined length, and during that time, the final output pulse cannot be re-triggered, and this comes in very handy for people that may have coordinational difficulties, and they may be able to voluntarily activate a muscle group, but they may have rebound effects over a certain period of time after the muscle is fired, so it eliminates noise problems down the line. Okay, now we've got this signal coming out, and I forgot to specify that we want our input amplifier battery operated for the very simple reason that we want to eliminate 60 cycle noise from the system, and it's very difficult at microvolt levels to eliminate 60 hertz. And anybody who's ever worked with biological systems and amplifiers knows that that is it's the devil's curse, if you mind the phrase. Okay. We use the battery operator. We want to isolate our final transistor signal from our computer input, which is the next phase in the system, by using an optic, photo-optic isolator or a relay system. Okay. Okay. So we've got into the computer. Now we've got a capability of putting in one on-off bit. Okay. We're back to these communication systems on the board. Any number of methods of scanning indication can be used, but for my own purposes, it appeals to me that you can have interactive program, much like the logic tree that was mentioned earlier, on a TV type display to get through a dialogue with this computer and have a system of communications or a recreational system or whatever. That pretty well outlines what my switch consists of, and I have an operating or partially operating system. I have a functioning switch in 304, should anyone like to come. Since large scanning systems and voice synthesizers have been pretty well covered, I'd like to kind of indicate how this switch could be used or who it would be specifically indicated for. The thought came to mind that if you're sitting on the only voluntary muscle that you have, it's a little hard to push a switch and, you know, lay down or communicate or whatever. So, in fact, you may not have the capability of pushing anything. You may just have a voluntary muscle group. For instance, the girl that I developed a switch for had cerebral palsy, And the only voluntary control that she had was lifting her eyebrows. So, and she did not have enough strength to actually push or pulse a switch. So the electrodes were attached to her forehead, okay? And she could raise her eyebrows. She learned by using the switch that she could minimize the amount of effort she had to put in. So there's a biofeedback learning technique there. And she could operate a scanning typewriter. This one had no programming capabilities, but gave her the capability of communicating, whereas she couldn't have operated a joystick or any manipulative type of switch that required mechanical depth perception and coordination. Okay. Again, I could see that someone that has perhaps even a verbal capability, but again, very limited muscle strength, muscular sclerosis, or something that would cause incapability of coordination to locate a limb in space, then this switch could have application. Okay. It sounds like it's fairly complicated, but in actuality, the only audiovisual aid that I brought with me, these little electrodes, okay? They're very readily available. They stick on. They're completely gelled. All you have to do is pull them out of a little foil pack and stick them on. Usually a physical therapist would know what viable groups, muscle groups a person would have that would be involved in a handicap training program. And generally they would know probably whether or not they would be capable of using the switch. So if you have someone that you wanted to refer to use a switch, then physical therapists that would be involved with that person would be able to probably do as the interfacing. The output could be used to switch any number of devices that would require just an on-off situation, or it could be again used to input to a computer. I think I'll open up for questions just to eliminate. I'm kind of getting off my subject, so I think I'll start at the back first.
How much discernible physical movement is involved to generate sufficient voltage to switch it? What I'm leading at is if you're switching a muscle which is visually discernible, wouldn't then some type of optical probe be less invasive? You don't have to use adhesive or
You mean
just mark a little spot and have a photocell scanner effect looking at movement.
Well, the problem there would come from alignment. Getting that limb in the same position all the time to be in the right place to get the appropriate amount of motion.
Well,
again,
moving a whole limb to get a pin mark and then just fasten a photocell light.
They have gone to the extent of doing that with records. I don't see any reason, you know, to using a laser for playing a record. I don't see any reason they couldn't do that. Again, I'm not familiar with anything of that sort for the handicap. I'm sure it could be done. Back there.
Are there other sensors that would interface with the body itself and the pickup? Are there other types of sensors other than
the
one you know
that
actually
need
right now?
Yes, there are. Liberty Mutual in Boston has what they call a Boston arm. They use electromyographic control for that. There's another technique that's being looked at both Liberty Mutual and I think Stanford, where they actually implant a little wire mesh or a conductive mesh sleeve around the end of a severed nerve. Let's say you had an amputee. They actually implant this little sensor around the end of the nerve and use that as an input. It has some advantages, but again, it's a surgical procedure, and that's always more costly, and there's always a chance of you know, infection and so forth. Next one in this way. Yeah, exactly.
If that's the case, if it has to be interfaced with the body at whatever point the user has available, the individual's alive and brain is alive, so why not just use EEGs?
Okay, EEGs, that's a good question. At this point, information extraction for communication from EEGs has been done. It's called evoked potentials.
Yeah.
However, if you've got an IBM 370 system, I say that facetiously, but really, the for a simple, cost-effective computer system that someone could use and learn from at without having this tremendous evoked potentials or something that it's, you know, like 20% capability in EEGs just as a diagnostic tool, and when it gets down to seeing something like evoked potentials, it takes quite sophisticated information processing capability, and it's.
I'm not sure I agree. You may be right. The thing that it is, if you're looking for a binary type situation, then you could be just getting a pattern matching type of program. And this would be established with a lot of feedback learning. So you don't have to look at the whole spectrum of EEG. You want that.
Okay, there has been some quite a lot of popular press about alpha wave conditioning, where you learn a state of sort of semi through feedback, you can learn to control certain EEG frequency spectra, right? Okay, that could be used, but again, it's very difficult to take a 4-year-old child and say, we want you to control your alpha waves, and here they are, or here's a feedback, and try and, you know, it can be done. Let's. Yeah, I won't argue.
How much muscle mass is necessary to trigger?
Well, that's muscle mass is the.
Well, would a blink of an eyelid trigger your switch?
Yeah.
Is that more than enough?
It depends on eyelid, you know, the extrinsic muscles of the eye are difficult to access, but you could do it. In fact, I've seen mechanical switches that are actually attached, like artificial, you know, eyelashes that actually switch on that basis.
Could you attach to the brow with pickup an eyelid blink?
Yeah, it could.
That is how specific is it?
Well, it is specific. In that the muscle mass directly under the electrodes is what's being observed, not muscle groups off in the distance. That's a limitation of the electrode. The specific area under the electrode is what is being looked at, you know, quote, looked at.
And if it was actually brow, it would not pick up
an eyelid. It would, but not, it wouldn't be the triggering response. It would be there, but you wouldn't be able to extract it, probably. Yes, sir.
What is the magnitude of the current timing
of the okay, the voltage magnitude runs but 10 to 50 I would say 10 to 50 microvolts. Amperage would be on the order of probably picoamps, very small picoamps. Yeah, very small. Well, that's there's a random background muscle firing that occurs continuously. And then when you get a voluntary activation of a muscle group, there's an increase. So it would come at, you know, there's a certain delay, you know, normal transit time from brain to the periphery, but it would be not perceivable.
You're saying you're saturating, getting blocks which are then integrated. How long are these blocks? The bar?
I'm sorry. I probably wasn't making myself clear. Any voluntary motion, all information going through the amplifier is integrated. Okay. It's a continuous integration. So all I would get on the output of the integrator would be just a slope change. That's all I would get. It's not a discrete time period. The integrator has a time constant of about 0.2 seconds. That's about all. Yes, sir.
Well, it seems to me what you've introduced is a off-the-shelf low-cost on and off switch versus the, which I don't know if there's much potential beyond on and off, whereas the EEG represents a possibility of a more complex switch but at a higher cost and not much of an off-the-shelf switch.
Right. Exactly.
Do you see the potential beyond on and off switch for your approach?
Well, the only thing that I would see is that if a person had coordination of opposing muscle groups or multiple voluntary muscle groups. But then again, if it gets that extensive, you could go to a mechanical switch because it would have coordinational capabilities. Yes, sir, in the back.
What would happen if you could create some muscle and more spirit if you develop a way, team up with the guy down here somewhere and
I didn't quite hear you.
Downstairs, or in some other room, somebody is picking up all the code, immediately, if you get characters on the screen.
Uh-huh.
Then you go through your
application. Again, the last part of what you said, we've got air conditioning going up here, I can't hear you.
Have you thought of trying to recognize lost code?
I have heard of people that have actually encoded ASCII-2 with EMG. I haven't done it myself because I just haven't had the time. But I have heard of people that have done that. I've heard of someone that had a teletype, and someone had a myographic switch that they encoded they memorized the ASCII-2 code group and did it that way. Anybody else? Okay, I'm finished.